Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Really excited about today's show, folks. We're going to get back into the subject of aliens, which we haven't been into for a little while. We've been monster heavy lately, but I tell you what, today I've got an exciting book. I'm going to hold it up if you're watching on video here. I tell you what, this book I am enthralled with. I got the chance to sit down with it and spend a little bit of time with it. It is Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, and it is written by my host today, Andy McGrillin. Andy McGrillin is the host and creator of That UFO Podcast. The podcast is a huge one, and I encourage you. We have a link in the description of this podcast, so you can check it out. It's got an international reach through Apple, Spotify, YouTube. It's reached over 5 million audio downloads in only 2 years, with almost 2 million YouTube views. The podcast started off during the lockdown in May of 2020. It quickly rose up the podcasting charts to secure regular places in the top 10s in science charts around the globe. In the summer of 2022, the podcast was also recognized in the British Podcast Awards in the Listener's Choice Top 20. It also continues to grow in stature and reputation as the UFO subject explores its places in the mainstream news cycle. As a matter of fact, if you go through Google, our guest Andy McGrillin is I believe it's in, like, if you just search Andy's name, he's mentioned in one of the latest news articles. He's quoted by a major news source in one of the latest UFO articles. I'm telling you, Andy is all over the place in the news cycle lately. We're talking mainstream news cycles. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about some breaking news with Andy today. So I'm a little excited to have Andy on today. This book is a mix of, I'm telling you, it's a mix of some stuff that we're going to talk today about: crash retrieval, abductions, military, civilians, and close encounters. It's got a lot of great stuff. Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects and Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome into Darkness Radio, Andy McGrillin. Andy, thank you so much for being on today.
Wow, thank you for that introduction. I can honestly say I've never had one like that before. So yeah, pretty cool.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So Andy, first of all, I got to tell you, I want to compliment you on how detailed this book is, and the fact that you've broken it down into different types of experiences, different sub genres that we can go to. And first of all, it's a gorgeous book, a detailed book, gorgeous book, and the fact that we can go to this book and realize one thing that really should scare the hell out of people, that this is not a localized phenomenon. No one can go to their area and say, you know what, we think we can claim that we're the UFO capital of the world. There's no such thing. It should scare people that this is a worldwide phenomenon and it happens quite frequently everywhere.
Yeah, that's something I can't take credit for how nice the book looks. There was a team who worked on it in terms of the cartographer who dealt with the maps. There were folks who went and researched the pictures for me. I obviously made suggestions and gave some indications as to things I would like in there, but for copyright, they've got to be careful. There was a copywriter who went through the dialogue to make sure whatever I had written made sense. And I think I gave her a pretty hard time in some of the post-editing for, you wrote this but then wrote this, which one makes more sense. So thank you to everyone at Ivy Press and Quattro who made the big difference there. So yeah, they have made a beautiful book, and I just put the words into it. And thank you for the nice kind of words about it. It's the first time I've seen the book outside of the one over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like it really exists now, and it's not just a thing that I have, which is quite strange still. And regarding the international flavour to the book, that was something on the initial call about how the book came around. It wasn't something I wanted to do. It wasn't like, I've got an idea for a book, I'm going to write one. Do you mind me sharing the story? Is that okay?
Please do, yeah.
Yeah, so in 2023, there were some big hearings where a gentleman, David Grush, came forward, who was a former intelligence official, and he shared in front of Congress, along with two former pilots, the fact that he had spoken to over 40 witnesses as part of his role in the US government, that there was unequivocal proof of aliens visiting Earth. His terminology was more around non-human biologics, non-human craft, that kind of thing. But he was talking aliens and UFOs. Let's call a spade here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we're both into the same kind of stuff. So a few weeks after that hearing, the publisher reached out to me on LinkedIn, I think it was, and basically asked if I was Andy that done the podcast. I was like, yeah, that's me. And then we got on a call and they were like, look, we've got an idea. We do a book series called Atlas Of, and they've got some really successful books in that series. And would I like to write the UFO book in that series? And genuinely, I said to them, I'm not an author. This was 2 years ago. Like, I'm not an author. I can't really write. I mean, I can write, but, you know, it's not going to make any sense. There are far more qualified people than me out there who do wonderful work and who would qualify as genuinely being authors in all kind of subjects. But they were like, look, if you can put the information down, and I said to them, it would sound like me. I don't want it to not sound like me. It would have to be something that I would pick up and read. People that don't have time to read, you know, massive books and all that kind of stuff, it's not going to be, and I don't want to put people off, I was like, it's not going to be the greatest research book on the planet. For example, I've wrote a chapter on Roswell, which is what, 12 or pages, 15 pages,
mm-hmm.
but people write full volumes of books on Roswell.
Sure.
So it's to capture the flavour of these cases. And one of the big things the publisher really wanted from the get-go was it had to be international. They didn't want it to be just the US. You and I both know the US is probably the UFO capital of the world. In a sense, it's where everyone thinks of. Immediately you think of Roswell as the UFO case. However, I was really keen to break away from that, and I'd say half the book's probably US-centric. The other half, you cover all the continents, or I cover all the continents in there even, and it goes to France, China, Iran, Ukraine, Russia, all these different countries. Putting Ukraine and Russia there together was a bit of a faux pas. But yeah, how things are at the minute. So it does cover the bases, and there was a whole lot more I could have written about and for. I'm glad I didn't have to, because
mm-hmm.
if you want to go into detail, Christ, it was fun writing a book, and it may be my only book, so enjoy it. But yeah, it shed a light on a lot of cases I knew about, but I think even for seasoned UFO folks, there are cases in there that you either won't know about at all, or maybe have heard very little about, because there's probably very little out there in the subject. So I want to say it was fun to write. I would say it was fun to write at times. It did take me the best part of 18 months. Mm-hmm. I started writing it around this time in 2023, with me submitting it finally back in February of this year.
Okay.
So, yeah. And for those who don't know me, I have a family. I've got 3 young children. I've got a full-time job and a podcast.
Wow.
And I decided that wasn't enough and threw writing a book into the mix as well. So it's the culmination genuinely of blood, sweat, tears, some maniacal laughter, and yeah, a little bit of hard work here and there thrown in.
Well, on top of that, I mean, okay, I'm gonna give people a little bit of a peek into your world too. On top of that, you work out and you do fitness too. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like you had any spare time in your life. And then it's not like this is a small book either. Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects and Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena is no pamphlet, my friend. I mean, there's a lot of good information in this book. So
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
So this is no light project. I mean, you know, I mean, it's good stuff. And so, you know, you didn't, okay, I'm going to go ahead and just say it. You didn't half-ass this, right? So,
no.
You put a lot of hard work into this.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'll be self-deprecating enough at times. It's a very Scottish way of being, but I did do hard work when it was called upon. There were genuinely a few times, it's probably cliche to say, that I thought I might just mail the publishers and say, look, I can't finish this. It's too much work. Probably getting it started was difficult. And then maybe got a little bit of a head of steam up. And then I think I got maybe a quarter of the way through it. And I was like, God, this is just taking so long. And then you have days where you're not motivated to do it because you've got a million things to do. And then sometimes, you know, I'll start it next week becomes I'll start it at the end of next week. I'll start it next month. Do you know what? I'm really going to get into it the start of the month after. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you're getting behind. And I spent a lot of afternoons, a lot of nights, which my wife will attest, going to kind of coffee shops, Starbucks being my vice at the time, and literally just cracking out as much as I could. I tended to try and watch a documentary or two, watch some clips from different YouTube shows that would maybe talk about a case, and then do a little bit of reading around it, some articles, things like that. Then I would start to put stuff together and just chip away at it from there and be like, okay, this reports this, this reports this, these are conflicting views, you know, can I find the right thing? And if I couldn't, then, you know, report that within the book to say, actually, and I think trying to be honest about it as an amateur in terms of being a researcher, or if you want to call me an author, like, you know, I'm doing that, it's it's difficult. So just to be able to say, and it's trying me to be authentic, look, I couldn't find which of these two things was correct. And I'll give you an example.
Sure.
One of the cases in the book is it China
mm-hmm.
or Guangzhou? Now, where is, let me just find it. Oh no, Kofu, Japan, I think it is. Kofu, Japan, sorry.
Yeah.
Like I say, it was 2 years ago. And there's a couple of young boys who have this incredible encounter of a UFO. And because of where it's from, being from Asia, being from Japan, there's not a whole lot of information on it. There's not documentary after documentary made. There's some cool YouTube documentaries, you know, a little bit of anime voiceover that we come to expect. The articles, of course, are few and far between. They're all in Japanese, so you're relying on translations. And it talked about the boys during the incident seeing this craft and running into a nearby graveyard. But then a documentary I watched talked about them running into a vineyard. And I was like, right, wait a minute, those are two very different places.
Right.
But then through a little bit more research, you find out in Japanese to English, vineyard and graveyard often have the same translation. So it's not that it's necessarily made up, but the fact is actually we're not sure which one it was. However, it doesn't mean the case didn't happen. There wasn't a whole strength of evidence alongside it as well. So all of that came into it. And I think my biggest spate of writing the book came during the European Championships, the football in 2024,
okay.
Where genuinely most of that summer, I work 9 to 5 and I would stay in the office from 5 till 9 or 5 till 10. I would put the football matches on in the background, on their soccer matches for the US audience
mm-hmm.
and the Canadians. I'd put those on in the background and I would sit with my laptop. The office TV had the football on mute. My laptop had a documentary on and my iPad would have like an article or a book or something. And I would just sit and try and write. And sometimes you could do like a case in a day or and like a full chapter. Other times it was 2 or 3 days. Sometimes you'd have to come back to it. But it was an experience writing the book, and it certainly, it feels like it was 2 years ago in a lot of ways. And like I said to you, my memory is god awful, so I don't even remember half the book. And maybe I blacked out writing it. I don't know. But yeah, I know it exists because you've got one.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, Andy, what it is, and we talked a little bit before the show. What it is, I think, and you know this, doing a show. I know this, doing a show, is you go through so many cases per year. And I think you have to process and you have to move on. You have to have the memory almost of like an NFL quarterback, right? You have to have the memory of a goldfish, so to speak, right? You have to tackle what's in front of you. You have to move on to the next one. Tackle, move on. I know with my listeners and viewers, they'll say to me, hey, you remember 2 weeks ago or remember a month ago when you had this guy on? Or you remember 3 months ago when you had this guy on and you said this? No, I'm sorry, I don't. Because I've got to move on to the next week. I got to remember the next book. I got to remember the next project because the next guy, the next people I have on, I got to give them all my energy and I've got to dedicate myself to remembering their project. And I want to give them the best of me. In order to do that, I got to forget what I did in the past and I got to move on and give them all of me, right? Mm. In order to do that, I gotta scrap what it is I just did and empty my brain so I can fill it up with what's next. And I don't think people remember that. And there's only so much capacity up here, right?
Yeah, my brain works like RAM in a PC, where it goes straight in and then comes straight back out. It's only required for a certain amount of time. And that's where even the style of the book, I'm 39 years old. Being Scottish, if you're watching this, I look 50, right? But I'm 39. And I think I can appreciate, I suppose you want to call this a coffee table book, where you can pick it up, flick to a chapter, read a page, read a couple of pages, even just look at the pictures and put it back down. You don't have to pick it up and read it from beginning to end, because I find that really difficult these days with books. And my brain's probably rotted from being that generation that discovered the internet and, you know, spent all night online, you know, as we did back in the day. So for me, it was a book that I couldn't have written, I don't think, any other way. And it's beautifully filled out as well, like I say, with the maps and the pictures and stuff in it as well. So yeah, it's a nice one to pick up and flick through a few pages, even share with a friend and say, do you know what? Talking about UFOs, check this book out. You don't have to read the whole thing. Pick a chapter, pick a favorite case, recommend it, and they can pick it up and put it down at their will.
I'll give people a sneak peek here. This is the chapter having to do with Whitley Strieber in Kingston. So here's a quick look at just a brief shot of like one of the maps of Kingston here, and we'll talk a bit about Whitley here in just a moment. Because I have a question about Whitley. It's a guest we have in common. Whitley Strieber. Actually, we could talk about it before the break. Whitley's an interesting. An interesting case, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And that the story changes from time to time. And I'm interested in talking about him to you, Andy, in that it's been a few years since we've had Whitley on this program. And you've talked to him more recently than I have. I think when Whitley was on this program, he was very agitated, I think is the word. He was at a point in his life where he wanted to call these visitors, I think he called them visitors. He didn't want to call them aliens. He didn't want to call them, and for those who are watching or listening, the things he had this experience with, he and his wife, that had, as you put it so eloquently in the book, that had raped him. He didn't want to talk about the experience at all when he was on the show with me. He gave scant details, although he would give just enough to tell the story. He was very much conflicted about whether he wanted to talk about it at all. The way he put it is, I put it in books. It's out there. And I was like, wow. You know, it was like pulling teeth. I'm curious, for those who are just tuning in and getting to know you, Andy, what was your interview like with him? I know they can go to listen to your podcast. We have a link in the description of this program to listen to your podcast. But what was your experience like with Whitley? And do you feel like as he's advancing in age, he's more accepting of this phenomena? And is he kind of leaning into the experience a lot more and getting to understand it a lot more?
So I've had a few different experiences with Whitley, all positive. Look, I think the second interview I had with him, or third, we recorded twice because he wasn't happy with the interview. And I suppose, like, to what you've said, he was perhaps a little bit agitated. Nothing aimed at myself, I don't think. But we recorded the interview. I thought it was fine. I thought it was good. I thought he spoke well because he's very eloquent.
Yes.
I wish I could speak like that. Mm-hmm. He's a very intelligent guy. He's obviously a very successful author in his own right, even outside of the UFO subject. But he felt that he didn't come across well and asked to redo the whole interview. And we did the following day, like an hour and 20 minute interview. I think a few things to address. Like anything over time, details change. That happens across the board. Like if you ask me and my wife, we get married 13 years ago now. 12 years ago, actually, I'll get that right in case she listens to this. 12 years ago almost. And if you ask us details of the wedding day, I don't remember a whole lot about it. But things I do remember, my wife may have a slightly different recollection to me. Mm-hmm. Now, are either of us lying? Or is that just naturally the passage of time that your brain fills in different details? As you talk about things, you know, you add little bits of detail that perhaps you remember happening or thought had happened but didn't, and they just become part of the memory. And I don't think that's any different to the UFO subject, especially with things that happened going back, what, to the late 80s with Whitley's experience. It's funny, you've got the South Park stuff over your shoulder there and the Timmy, Timmy stuff. Like, a lot of folks don't know, the first episode of South Park is Cartman gets an anal probe.
Yes, yeah.
That is based on Whitley Strieber's experience.
Yeah,
so the whole first episode of South Park is based on an experience where Whitley, like you say with me, he talked about he was raped and he had medical examinations that show that he'd been kind of forcefully sodomized. He had the scarring, all that kind of stuff. But South Park made fun of it. South Park got famous. Mm-hmm. And I love South Park. So, you know, with me, humor-wise, nothing's off the table. If you're going to laugh, you've got to laugh. But hey-ho,
right.
It's 2025. Not everyone feels that way. But you can appreciate then if you're Whitley Strieber and you share this story, there aren't many things in 2025 left in the world that is potentially a crime. Well, I say potentially a crime. Rape is a crime.
Yes.
But there's not many things you could come out in public and say that would be laughed at other than something involving aliens. So for someone to come forward, I think it still does affect him, clearly. There's a lot more detail to the story over the years and further incidents have happened. It's Whitley's to tell, you know, his wife passing away, still being in contact with his wife's spirit.
Yeah.
Those visitations have stopped. I would recommend people go and check out your interview again, Tim, with him, my interview with him, other people's. And I think it gives you different views. And that's why I love podcasting,
mm-hmm.
because five people should be able to interview one guest. And if they're doing their job right, you'll get five different interviews. 80-85% of the content may be the same and may sound similar. You should always be able to get 10-15% out of that person that's different, whether it's a follow-up, a different tone, a different perspective, because your experience in life is different to my experience in life.
Right.
And your experience in the paranormal, you know, whether it's Bigfoot, cryptids, UFOs, ghosts, whatever it is going to be different to any opinion I have on that, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And that hopefully draws out a kind of different essence from the interview. And I think that's probably important in all of this, that anyone doesn't watch one interview and judge a guest off of it.
Right.
People can have off days. People can have good days. I personally never had like a bad interview with Whitley, but I can appreciate where skeptical folks, and I always like to think I can look at both sides of the coin, and I think that's important, talking about, you know, the paranormal, if we're going to get umbrella this whole phenomenon, that you have to be able to say, why would someone be skeptical or wary? Well, intellectual author, best-selling worldwide smash hit author, claims to have had UFO experience and writes international bestseller about said experience. If anyone could make that up, why wouldn't it be someone with that capability? And I'm far from saying Whitley did, but I can see where folks are skeptical. But then you can see how that potentially weighs on a Whitley Strieber, that experience, if indeed it did happen, and it happened how he's written it and communicated it, has been made fun of, has been ridiculed, and still 30 years later is the subject of ridicule. And that must weigh in a person, let alone the fact that you're visited and contacted by non-human entities throughout your life at various times, and he seems to view them as relatively positive experiences at times,
mm-hmm.
but not always welcome. So, yeah, I'm glad it's not me, let me say that much.
Right. And I would think, too, here, Andy, that, you know, the fact that he stuck to the story for so many decades, that would lend credence to the fact that this is a real story, right? That he's, I mean, he hasn't wavered too far from the original story, right? It's pretty much been the same story throughout this time. I mean, you know, it the names may have changed as to what he's called these things, but the meat of the story has always been the same story. It's not changed. And I think with that, anyone who's skeptical about what's happened to Whitley and the emotion of the story has always been there. I mean, he's always had that same emotion, that raw anger, that raw, well, let's face it. It's anger. It's that raw violation has always been there with Whitley. Right. And you don't get that for someone who's making up an experience. So I would think that that alone would tell people that what he's been through is real. Interestingly enough, my co-host, one of my co-hosts, when we were doing Supernatural News yesterday, was talking about another experiencer, and we'll talk about him when we get back from the break, and that's Travis Walton, who's also featured in your book. So when we come back, we'll talk about Travis Walton and that case as well. Travis Thorpe, my co-host, and I, I've hung out with Travis Walton many times at different conventions. Another person I believe has truly had an experience and truly has had that run-in with extraterrestrials. And you talk about someone who's had an experience and an authenticity. You look for authenticity in a person. Travis Walton has that authenticity. And again, refer to yesterday's episode for Travis Thorpe's story as to why he thinks that Travis Walton has that authentic experience, or why he thought he had that authentic experience. It's quite the story. Here's the book, folks. And it is a good one. Again, Andy McGrillin is our guest. The foreword is by D.W. Pasulka. It is Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects and Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. Ivy Press is the publisher. We have a link in the description of this program. When we come back, we're going to talk about Travis Walton. We're going to talk about some other cases as well. It's broken down into sections. Crash retrieval, abduction, military, civilian, and close encounter cases. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about maybe some of each. And also, we'll talk to Andy about some breaking news that's happening as we speak. So that'll all happen when we come back with Andy McGrillin right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest is Andy McGrillin. This is the book right here, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects and Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. The book is fantastic, folks. It's put out by Ivy Press. I highly encourage you to get a copy. We have a link in the description of this program so you can do so. This book actually comes out. You can pre-order it right now. It comes out middle of the month. So you'll be able to get that, pre-order that book, but I highly encourage you to get it. It is available middle of the month. In fact, let me grab the exact date on that, because I do have it here in front of me here. September 16th is when this comes out. So it'll be available September 16th at all fine booksellers and online. So there you go. Okay, Andy, before we left people, we were talking a little bit about Travis Walton, Fire in the Sky case, as most people know it. I've had the pleasure of being able to hang out with Travis Walton a few times in my day, over the years, over the decades. And that's, as I said yesterday during Supernatural News, that's one person who you can tell when someone's authentic, when they've had an experience, when you're laughing, chatting, having just a good time. And it's only when the experience is brought up and it seems like, boom, the light in their eyes goes out and they're right back in it, right? and you know, you when you see the light in someone's eyes kind of go out, and then boom, they're having that experience. It's kind of scary. You know that that's an authentic person that's had an authentic experience. What say you?
Yeah, so I'll share with you that I like to think I'm skeptical in a really healthy way in the UFO topic, that you've always got to take anyone's experience at face value. I've had my own sighting when I was younger. We can talk about it at some point if you like.
Yes, please.
But I'm not one to judge when someone comes to me and shares a story, whether it's a really intense experience like a Whitley Strieber, like a Travis Walton, like a Calvin Parker, or if someone comes to me and says they saw a light in the sky, they think it was weird. That's fine. I'll listen to anyone. A really famous gentleman you'll know by the name of Scott Hall was a wrestler, Razor Ramon.
He
had one of my favorite ever quotes, and it's something like, you know, listen to everyone's opinion, but make up your own mind. And I think if you listen to anyone's story, I'd like to change a little bit. But then you have to make up your own mind off the back of it, and don't let anyone swayed you because of their bias or their narrative or their experience. So again, with the Travis Walton story, it's one of the most famous, like Whitley Strieber, in the UFO topic, in the conversation. I've not actually had the pleasure of interviewing Travis Walton. His story, like you say, incredibly well known through the book Fire in the Sky, through the movie. It's one that in the last year or so, there was a clip surfaced online, I don't know if you remember, where he was filmed for a documentary piece. And while being paid for the work, which you would absolutely expect, you know, someone comes to you and says, Tim, I want to film you for several hours and chat, we're going to pay you. Oh yeah, sure, that's fine. The camera crew left the film on while he was being paid and counting his money, and it had a really bad look. Ultimately, though, he's only taking the money for the work that he's doing and the service provided.
Mm-hmm.
But when that was put online, how does that look? UFO guy shares a story and counts the money afterwards, okay? So there's optics to these things.
Sure.
Travis Walton has shared the story for decades. Like yourself, I think there's a quality to meeting someone, especially face-to-face, and being able to communicate and share that story and hear it. Same when I've been able to interview guests and hear them tell their story firsthand. Sometimes you get that authenticity come through. Other times, maybe, Tim, perhaps you get more of a feeling of, personally, I'm not buying this one as much, mm-hmm. for whatever reason it could be. The Travis Walton story, I've always believed something happened. I know a lot of folks do find some inconsistencies in the story with him, with his friends. I've personally not had a reason to disbelieve it, but I would always just encourage folks with anything in the UFO topic, you know, make up your own mind off the back of it. And it's interesting to hear you feel having that face-to-face conversation. There's an authenticity to Travis. I would love to ask you a question though, Tim. I appreciate it's your podcast.
Yeah.
How do you disseminate whenever you speak to someone, whether it's UFOs, ghosts, whatever it is, that they're being authentic, but there's a difference between believing you're being authentic and genuinely telling the truth?
You know, it goes back to, I'll tell you, Andy, I had a mom who was a drug and alcohol counselor growing up.
Mm.
And there's signs of people who have been in trauma.
Yeah.
And you can tell someone who's been through trauma, and there's body language.
Yeah.
And there's a way to tell when someone retreats within themselves, when they start to describe their story. And there's little tics and little things that they go into when they talk. And there's little tells when someone is trying to fake their way through a story.
Mm.
You know, there's eye movements and things like that. And in law enforcement makes a living out of telling when someone is trying to fake their way through a story or when they're telling you the truth. And it's not hard when you're, especially in this day and age, as interviewers, when we're interviewing somebody face to face, to look somebody in the eye and see if someone's telling the truth or if they're, you know, if they're trying to put one over on you, put it that way.
I remember in the very, very early days of the podcast, and I mean very early, first couple of months, I was given someone's name for research to look at them being a guest potentially. They were recommended to me by someone who I'd interviewed. And long story short, they invited me to a UFO group. It was virtual at the time. I started the podcast during COVID, like you mentioned. So everything was virtual. We were all working from home, stuck at home and whatnot. And I sat online in this UFO group one evening, and the gentleman in question began to share his story. And just the way he was talking, and I'm no expert in psychology or mental illness, anything like that. I would never claim to be, not my wheelhouse. But you just get enough signs that there's a lot more behind this than maybe a genuinely alien or non-human experience. Maybe there was that to it, but I was just getting the sense that this isn't an avenue I want to go down. They began to share a story that involved a really bad childhood trauma.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's when this stuff started. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was just like, that's not an avenue I want to go down exploring, and wish that gentleman all the best. A couple of years after that, I listened to a radio station in the UK called Talk Sport, mm-hmm. which, funny enough, talks about sport. I'm a big football fan mm-hmm. in the UK. And they have like a late night sports bar where it's very much late night radio, 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. The audience is predominantly that London cabbie, late night drivers, truckers, all that kind of stuff. People listening to this who are driving long distances, throw on a podcast or a whole lot of shows. And they mentioned they were going to, because they get kind of quirky and kooky guests on now and again, they mentioned this gentleman was coming on the podcast to talk about UFOs. And I just shuddered. And they ripped him to bits because it's quite a humorous show. And yeah. This guy was clearly not the type of person that should have been exposed to that type of... And I think even they clicked pretty early on. Yeah, this isn't the guy to be doing it. And I knew it was going to go badly. So, yeah, I think there's certain things where I'm like... There's, like you say, there's tells. And especially if your mother had that background, drug and alcohol counsellor.
Yeah.
You just get to know certain things. And I think that's always something to be very wary of in the UFO topic.
Well, there is a thin line, right? There's the there's and we know that from, like, say, you know, here in America, you've got Coast to Coast AM, right? And I'm sure you've heard it over there too. You've heard Coast to Coast AM, and you do whenever they open lines, you do hear your share of people who probably are calling in and do have mental issues, and they're calling in because they really do need to unburden themselves. And they're probably making up a story because they want to fit in, or they want to be heard. You know, you have other people who have genuine paranormal experiences that need to tell their stories. Now, to be able to discern that, it does take a certain amount of skill, and it takes a certain amount of a gift, right? To be able to sit there and talk with somebody and be able to cleave, you know, does this person have an issue and need to talk to a professional, or does this person have a paranormal issue and need to talk to someone who can help them paranormally? But again, that line is a lot more, it's a lot less gray and a lot more defined than you would think. You know, if you start to hear things like, well, the voices are pronounced and they're telling me to do something. Well, okay, we know that that's a trauma, and that's, you know, that's not a ghost. That's not an alien. That truly is a mental illness, and you need to.
I do feel though for Tim, for there will be a percentage of folks who either are experiencers, contactees, whether you want to even go down the route of like mediumship or channelers, all that kind of stuff, who maybe the line does blur for some, and
oh, sure.
Excuse the Scottish accent, folks, the word blur is difficult to say.
Sure.
There is that kind of mixing where perhaps someone does have a mental illness brought on by a genuine experience, but how do you discern for that? And that's where, when I've had interviews in the past with folks who are quite deep in the experiencer field. It's one where I'm always very cautious and skeptical, but again, I love to give people the platform to talk about their experiences if possible. I think there's really good organizations to go to who can talk about folks who maybe are having a difficult time with these types of experiences. But do you go down the route of just believing everyone? And I think that's a dangerous route to go down. Or do you go down the route of not believing everyone, which is probably equally as dangerous?
That is.
So
right.
There's a discernment there, which, like you say, there's probably a skill or at least an empathy required to kind of navigate.
Well, and that's what makes a guest like Nathaniel Gillis so interesting. I don't know if you've had him on your show, but Nathaniel Gillis has had an interesting, as a demonologist, I would say demonologist slash alien hunter, is a bit of an interesting cat in himself, right? He's one who has found that these demons are taking alien form. And he believes that aliens and demons are one and the same. That they're.
I've never hosted Nathaniel. Again, there's kind of conversations that maybe aren't for me at this moment in time, where I'm at with the UFO topic, or have been my whole life. That's just maybe not my bag, as such. But I don't necessarily think that's totally unfair to go down the route of angels and demons just being labels for something that hundreds of, if not thousands of years ago, people didn't understand what they were seeing.
Sure.
At one point, there was no word for blue, so the sea was described as being silver, because that was the closest word they had to it. So if you go down through the roots of language and the origins of language and words, people far more intelligent than myself can do that. The foreword to the book you mentioned was written by Diana Walsh Pasulka. Diana Pasulka has been on the Joe Rogan podcast now several times, a religious history professor. She is wonderful and speaks so well about the UFO topic. She famously wrote the book American Cosmic, which is like a huge bestseller and very well known across the UFO world. And she goes into that background, you know, having visited the Vatican's archives and that religious background she has, where she pulls on, this could be an example of something that perhaps is non-human. Here's where things get mixed together. And who's to say this phenomenon, whether it be a spirit, an entity, a djinn, poltergeist activity, an alien being, I do hasten to use words like sprites and fairies, because they have certain connotations, but those are largely down to modern media. All of these things, when you go back far enough, have a lot of very similar tropes, a lot of very similar themes, a lot of similar looks, and a lot of occasions as well. And perhaps these are just the way over the years they were bastardized across religions, mythologies, folklore. And that's where you become, if I say fairy, you think Tinkerbell. That's a Disneyfied image. In the same way, Santa Claus, you think of a certain look, that's Coca-Cola. Most folks know that now. One of my favourite analogies, if you'll let me, is that if I ask you what noise does a frog make, most people will say a ribbit. And it's actually, most frogs don't make that noise. I think it's something like 3% of the world's frogs make a noise that sounds like ribbit. That's because the frog local to Hollywood back in the day made the noise ribbit. So whenever you heard a frog in a Hollywood movie, it made that noise. However, 97% of frogs make a croak. But because of a Hollywood bias, we have this idea in our head of what a frog is. So now amplify that across the paranormal world, UFOs, aliens, any number of different narratives, you've got a Hollywood depiction of what that is. And I think that's why if you say to someone now, I don't discuss fairies on the podcast, I'll use that as an example.
Okay.
Oh, here's some pictures of fairies, or someone's talking about having an experience with fairies, they'll laugh because they think Tinkerbell, they think Peter Pan. That's a fairy, not the traditional folklore version of what a fairy would be, which is that a label for alien, whatever it may be down the line. So it's an interesting aspect to the topic.
Well, and forgive me, the only reason I bring Nathaniel into the conversation is this, and that is because he had an experience himself where he was possessed at an earlier age, and the demon itself presented itself as an alien. So that's the only reason I bring that into the conversation. So that's neither here nor there. Switching things up a bit. And then we'll get back to the we'll get back to the book itself, because I want to talk about one or two other things here in the book, and specifically about experiences. I had teased earlier in the program that there was some breaking news that was happening in the actual UFO world. You had brought up David Grush earlier in the program. Mm. One thing I want to ask you before we get into the breaking news that's happening around the world is this. I've always, you know, we've had discussions on Supernatural News between myself and Travis Thorpe about what happens with these whistleblowers when things settle down on Capitol Hill. I'll put it that way. You know, Luis Elizondo's come forward and he's brought quite a few things forward. My concerns for David Grush, I get a bad feeling, Andy. I really do. Because it seems to me like these lawmakers are playing around, but they don't really want to get anything done. You know, I mean, no one's ever said, you know what, let's look into USOs. Let's look into abductions. No one's ever said, you know what, let's bring in abductees and get their experiences. Let's dig deeper. Let's really get some solid evidence. That's not going on at Capitol Hill. It's just, oh yeah, just bring your stuff forward and we'll take a look at it.
Yeah, so a few different things on that, and it's an interesting aspect of the UFO conversation. Let me say, if I have a conversation with a colleague at work, my day job, about the UFO topic, I don't go around advertising the fact I have a podcast, okay? If the subject of UFOs came up, there's the whole basic conversation of, do you believe in that stuff, or do you believe UFOs are real? And you do the whole, well, you know, UFOs are real, that's unidentified flying object, it means just that, it's an object, we don't know what it is. What you're asking me is, do I believe in aliens? Let's just, you know, again, call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what we're asking. So then I usually try and put people on the back foot and just entertain the conversation in a different way. And you can kind of go around the loop of, okay, so what if these things aren't coming from far away? Because that seems really impossible and difficult for us to do. So it's hard to comprehend something else doing it. So, and then usually it'll be, what do you mean? Okay, so what if these objects are already here? Mm-hmm. Well, where? What if they were under the water? And you can kind of entertain different aspects of the conversation with a friend or member of the public or a family member to a certain point. But as soon as I start saying, well, what if there's an underwater factory that's mobile and moves whenever the US government approaches it and it's generating non-human drones? You lose people out that conversation. You know, when you talk about, you know, true experiencers, the light going out, you know, a friend or a member of the public, when you're chatting to them at a party or a wedding or whatever you go to, and you start getting too deep.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you see the light just diminish and they tune out and they are trying to get away from that conversation. Now, bring an abductee, bring an experiencer, bring someone that's going to take the conversation up several gears into that setting. And I just think you lose too much of the public, and we're not there yet to have that conversation. And I've had disagreements with folks on the podcast about this. And like I say, I've hosted multiple experiencers, famous, well-known ones, and I've hosted just your average normal members of the public like me, mm-hmm. who have had experiences or claim to have experiences, and I value them all equally. But I don't think, and it's just my opinion, you can have those conversations at those levels yet, because the public at large aren't ready for it. So you have to get to the point where you can talk about UFOs as being a real, tangible, genuine thing, and not have people laugh or scoff. And I think it takes baby steps to go from A to B to C to D to E, and not just be jumping all over the alphabet by going, okay, so next up, the hearings on cattle mutilations. No, too early, too soon. You can't go into that stuff because it's quite scary, but it's also difficult to have those conversations when you've not laid the groundwork. Imagine you watched Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., the first. You've seen Iron Man, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
You watched the Marvel movies?
Oh,
yeah.
I love them.
Most folks. Yeah, of course you have.
Yep.
So imagine you watched Iron Man, and then the next film I showed you, having not seen the rest, was Avengers Endgame.
Oh, geez. Yeah, it's too far forward. Yeah,
that's a big jump, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who are all these characters? What's going on? Where did he come from? you know, who's this bad guy? What happened to the last one? Wait, they're in space. There's a talking raccoon. It's too much. But what Marvel done was they built up your expectations and what the movies are going to be over a decade. And they gently brought things in. They introduced new settings, new characters, new abilities, bigger stories. That's what has to happen with the public at large. With the UFO topic, you have to start at basic, you introduce the main characters, then you go for the bigger storylines, and you have to get the buy-in early on, because see, if you don't get the buy-in with Iron Man and Captain America and Thor, then you have to reboot it and start again.
Yeah.
That's how I would look at it.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Good analogy. So if you don't mind, can we ask you what your experience was?
Yeah, yeah. And we have to go over the breaking news stuff as well. Remember.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes. Tell us what the breaking news stuff is. Yeah.
Yeah, just while I'm on that. So there are hearings in the United States now scheduled for the 9th of September. So they're happening at 10 a.m. Eastern, which is, what, 7 a.m. Pacific, I believe, if my US time zones are correct.
Yeah.
So that'll be like a 3 p.m. here in the UK on Tuesday at the US Capitol Visitor Center. So from what I'm told, that's quite a big room to host that in. That can hold hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
We actually just today, in the last couple of hours, have the witnesses and their names of who are going to be testifying in front of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the task force led by Representative Anna Paulina Luna and her colleagues. I know that Secrets Task Force have a bit of a reputation. That'll be dependent on guest to guest and political affiliation, all that stuff. I know enough about US politics now. I know more about US politics than UK politics, put it that way now.
Mm-hmm.
So the witnesses we've got are Jeffrey Nucciatelli. He's a US Air Force veteran. He's going to be talking about an experience he didn't have directly, but he was a security officer at Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Okay.
And he talked about seeing a massive red square that appeared above the base, or other folks did, and he had to get the reports on this. That's been shared on various podcasts. I've interviewed Jeff myself. Chief Alexandro Wiggins, who is a witness from an event in February 2023 on the USS Jackson. I'm going to be sounding really knowledgeable here, but I read all this a couple of hours ago before I recorded myself, so it's kind of fresh in the memory. He observed a tic-tac-shaped object coming out the ocean, joining up with other tic-tac-shaped objects and shooting off. This is backed up by radar logs, multiple witnesses. So he's going to be speaking. He's an active member of the US Navy, I believe, still.
Okay.
You have Dylan Borland, who is a US Air Force veteran. I don't know much about him. Not many folks do know much about Mr. Dylan Borland, but he's coming forward with his own story. And George Knapp, who is probably a more familiar name to folks, famous UFO journalist George Knapp, based out in Las Vegas. He's been reporting on the subject for the best part of 40 years now, famously bringing forward Bob Lazar and telling the whole Bob Lazar story back when he was under the pseudonym Dennis. That's the four folks. It'll be free to watch on YouTube. I've shared the link on my social media, but if you go on to the House Oversight, oversight.house.gov, all the links are on there. You'll find them on social media. But that's happening live, 10 a.m. Tuesday, 9th of September. So I recommend folks kind of tune in to check out what's said at those hearings. And all I would ask is people temper their expectation. These hearings are not set up for the public to realise that UFOs are real, aliens exist, and here's the proof. What you're going to hear is credible members of the military who are sharing experiences that are coming forward under difficult circumstances with a lot of pressure on them, and they're sharing experiences that either they had directly or colleagues they know of had directly in which they shared. So that'll happen on Tuesday, and very much look forward to that. The title of the hearing, when you bring up whistleblowers, this is particularly why I wanted to mention it, is called, the title is Restoring Public Trust Through UAP Transparency and Whistleblower Protection. So when you ask about David Grush and whistleblowers coming forward, or perhaps why we don't have whistleblowers coming forward who have worked on alien craft themselves or handled the alien bodies a la Brent Spiner's character in Independence Day, who's been underground at Area 51 for years, you know, love one of my favourite movies of all time. The less said about the sequel, the better. Perhaps we don't get that because it's so difficult and because the protections aren't there. Because look what happened to David Grush. He came forward. He shared his story in front of Congress. He did make waves around the world. In the UK, our media don't really report on the subject at all. For only a couple of days after David Grush came forward, I had serious mainstream journalists call me and radio outlets and TV outlets. And I'm very grateful, but that's how the book came about, you know, the one very kindly, Tim, you're talking about on the podcast. And yes, hopefully people pick up a copy. But that all came about off the back of David Grush's comments and him being brave enough to come out and share those stories. So he then had a lot of repercussions. He's appeared on the Joe Rogan podcast and he's shared a story on one or two other platforms. That's it. He's not done the podcast rounds, unfortunately, for people like me and you. He's not got a book deal yet. He's not been on major news networks sharing his story. He's working now for Representative Eric Burleson as a consultant in the background, doing his work quietly. He had a slander campaign against him. Jeez. From a journalist who managed to FOIA, which is notoriously difficult to FOIA anything with the US government, but they managed to find within 24 hours notice some very sensitive medical records that they shouldn't have been able to find, which talked about PTSD, David Grush's past, to defame him and slander him. Now, folks, you can put your own two and two together there, that government employee comes forward, talks about some really sensitive UFO stuff. Next thing, he's been slandered and dismissed online with information that would be very, very, very difficult to find unless someone told you exactly where to look. If I had a dime in a Walmart, and I'm going to use my US terminology here for your audience.
Please.
If I had a dime and I had it in a Walmart, in a random place, under a tin of beans, on a shelf that I had moved at the back of the store, and I said to you, go and find it, Tim. Now, if you came back to me within 3 minutes and you had that dime, I would almost guarantee someone told you where to look.
Yeah.
That's what happened with David Grush.
Jeez. You know, I'll tell you, Andy, I'm almost happy that George Knapp's going to be at this hearing, because there's a lot of gravitas to having Knapp there. One, because he's, I mean, not only does he have a huge national presence, I mean, not only with the Netflix show, with being on Coast to Coast AM, but he's a huge journalistic presence. I mean, he's been working for a Las Vegas station for decades, you know, and he's a huge investigative reporter. I mean, he's got a huge journalistic name. So, you know, for him to sit down in front of Congress and say, listen, I'm here to tell you, this is what I found. As a journalist, this is what I found. You have to believe me when I tell you. As a journalist, this is what I found. You have to sit and listen.
He's a very interesting guy. And even before his UFO work, in my last interview, I've interviewed George a few times now, really gracious with his time. I can tell folks, if you ever watch an interview of mine, I've never had a guest ask for money that I've hosted. I've never paid a guest. So you've got guys who you might look at as being UFO famous or whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. They've never been paid. They're giving up their time and they replied to emails and text messages and have conversations with me out off their own back. And my favourite conversations with people like George Knapp are the kind of 10 minutes before and 10 minutes after the interviews, where they kind of chat to you, and I wish people could see and listen. They're not spilling the secrets of the UFO world to me, but just that authenticity you talk about, that I've had guests where the interview's done, bang, they're gone. They're very, and they don't owe me anything, but when someone takes their time to spend time with you, just to chat and ask about you and how you are and what you're doing, and there's a genuineness to that. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's hard to fake and wouldn't make sense that guy's a government shill and this is a psyop and he's doing this for, well, not for me.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, George Knapp for me is a wonderful guy and has done a lot of great work. Even he wrote about the mafia in Vegas.
Yes.
Decades ago.
Yeah.
And that was a really scary subject. When you talk about, you know, people going missing in the middle of the night,
right,
writing about the mafia in Vegas back in the 80s and 90s, you didn't do that, or otherwise you ended up underneath one of those casinos and no one found you. So George Knapp's quite the character, quite the cat, I think, as the folks would have said back in the day.
Yeah, he could have ended up in a barrel in Lake Mead. He could have been one of those guys who ended up in the dry lake bed at one time a couple of years ago.
100%,
yep. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, talk about a brave guy.
You know? So what he brings to that hearing will be interesting, because what you've got is one second-hand witness, Jeff Nicitelli, I believe is going to be second-hand, so he'll be sharing information based on conversations he's had. The other two witnesses, Alex and Dylan, I believe are first-hand witnesses sharing their own sightings, their own experiences, their own stories from active duty. And then you've got George, who is a bit of a wild card, because is he going to be there representing whistleblowers who haven't come forward yet, for whatever reason that may be? Their own protection, they're not ready to, or they would rather speak through George. Is he there to talk about the history of the subject and answer questions in a different way? He's going to be there for a reason, but I, like you say, I don't think there's many folks better who aren't first-hand witnesses to speak to on this than George Knapp.
You know, even Mr. Rogers had to stand up in front of Congress and plead for money for public television. If George Knapp has to stand up there and just plead for Congress to take a look at UFOs, I mean, everyone needs a spokesman or a spokesperson. Yeah. So
if there was a Mount Rushmore to speak in front of Congress and it wasn't military folks because of the natural firsthand experiences, Knapp would be one of my four.
Yeah, yeah. I got to think he's an incredibly strong voice, so I got to think that's it. So, Andy, let's get your experience. I want to get your experience with the UFO. I want to hear your personal experience and what happened
to
you.
Yeah, so in the mid-90s, I can't give you an exact year because it was the mid-90s. I was about 10 years old, let's just say. And we have an organization in the UK called the Boys Brigade. A little bit like the Scouts. I don't know if you have it in the US, but in the UK, it's the Boys Brigade. So you would go to a church. I am not religious, but it was just the church hall was where it was held. And it was a winter's evening, around about November 95, whatever it was. And myself, my mother, my sister, my friend and his mum, we're all leaving the church. Dark night. You know, one of those really busy suburban streets where you've got a church, community centre, you've got just along the road, you've got like a Chinese takeaway, we've got like chip shops here, a shop and a pharmacy and a laundrette. So loads of shops, really busy road and lots of houses. And I really want to paint the picture that it's not out in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't a field. There was no grass round about. It's just thousands of houses as far as the eye could see. So there's a road, if people want to look it up, I was brought up in a place called Knightswood in Glasgow. Okay. The postcode is G13, if people really want to Google Maps it. Okay. And there's a road called Alderman Road, and it's really long. And at the end of the road, we're crossing the road about 9 o'clock at night. And normally our UFO sightings are, oh, look up in the sky. No. This thing, if you looked along the road, you couldn't see the bottom of it because of the houses and the trees at the end of the road. And if you imagine you were at a carnival or a fair and you get a Ferris wheel, are they called Ferris wheels in the US?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you got like a Ferris wheel, but imagine it's at like a 30 degree angle. So for the viewers, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. And it's spinning ridiculously fast that if someone was on that, they would have been thrown off it several miles before they landed. And you couldn't even make out the structure of it because it was just lights going round incredibly fast. So we were at most half a mile away from this, but it was big enough that if I had to guess, again, I'm going back 20 odd years here, folks, probably 50 to 100 feet in height, but just spinning, like I say, like a disc on its side, lots of lights. And we stood looking at it. Bear in mind, it's the mid-90s. There's no camera, there's no mobile phones mid-90s, really.
Yeah.
If you had a mobile camera, it would have been a big JVC or Sony camcorder on your shoulder, which you weren't walking about with. And we saw this thing and we all just looked at it. I remember my mum and my friend's mum being like, oh, that's a bit odd, isn't it? What's that? I was always into kind of UFOs as a kid, paranormal, Loch Ness Monster, who built the pyramids, all that kind of stuff really interested me. And I was like, I just always remember thinking, like, wow, that looks like a UFO. And we looked at it for maybe 30 seconds and then walked home. We walked a kind of adjacent road where it would have quickly gone out of sight. We didn't walk towards it. But again, bear in mind, we were in a really busy area where people were driving up and down that street. People would have lived next to where that was. It wasn't up in the sky. It was pretty low, almost what I would imagine hovering off the ground.
Okay.
So you've got to ask yourself, like, so one, we didn't report it because I was 10. So, you know, what was my mum going to do? Go home and phone the police and say we've seen a UFO. But she just said it was interesting and walked away. We just left it and there was no fair. There was no carnival. It wasn't a ride because if it was, everyone on it was dead because of the speed it was going at. So you've got to ask yourself things like, did other people see it and just never mention it? It was the mid-90s, so there's no social media to report it. Not everyone's jumping on Facebook to say, did anyone see that weird thing tonight? So perhaps lots of people saw it and just no one reported it. There's an element of perception management sometimes with UFO cases where maybe we saw something from where we were that people closer to it didn't. That then begs the question, are you meant to see it and other people aren't? Did people see something different? Did the five of us see different things? I've asked my mum and my friend and sister about it now. In recent years, my mum isn't a UFO person at all. She knows about the podcast. She knows I've got a book out. She's very proud of her son writing a book, right?
Yeah.
But if you ask about UFOs, she's no interest in it. And I ask her about that sighting, and I'll say, what did you see? And she remembers, I remember seeing something. I don't know what it was. And I'm like, can you describe it? She's like, nope, just a thing. She can't give me any detail other than a thing. She knows it wasn't up high. She can't draw it, describe it, or anything. And for me, that's incredible. She can't remember any detail. Same with my sister. Same with my friend. They remember it. I remember a couple of years ago on Facebook, I messaged my friend. I won't give his name. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I was like, do you remember seeing that as a kid? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, do you remember what it was or what it looked like? And he's like, nope. I remember it, though. And you might get a few folks skeptical going, oh, yeah, well seen the guy with the UFO podcast remembers the UFO. But I remember it so clearly. I just wish we'd maybe got a bit closer to it.
No, but you know what? The fact that everyone has a lack of memory is actually interesting. And the fact that maybe that's a phenomena, you know?
You could be really... I don't even know if egotistical is the word, but there's an element of this subject sometimes I wonder, are people meant to see things at a certain time for a certain reason? And it may not be to be important in that moment. Now, that could be making me sound self-important to say that was meant to keep my interest in the UFO subject. And 25 years later, I would start a podcast, right? That I okay.
But no, you're right. You're right. I'm saying you're right. Yeah.
But then I wonder, so examples in the book, the aerial case from Rua, Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
So the aerial school is a subject where a massive amount of children, 50 to 100 children, reported seeing a UFO land on their school grounds, basically, in Rua, Zimbabwe, at the aerial school it's called. They reported it. They ran back in. Some children described seeing silver-suited spacemen walking about outside of it, a distorted-looking field. Some reported it looked like the creatures were walking forward and then going back as if rewinding on a videotape. But that happened, and only it was recorded at the time by some famous ufologists, and there was a documentary made, and the BBC picked up on it. But only 20, 30, 40 years later did the subject really come to prominence. And you've got the aerial school phenomenon documentary by Randall Nickerson. Things like that come out, and the children who are now adults sharing their stories, and they will stick by, I saw this as a child. I remember drawing it. I remember the adults or parents being dismissive. The teachers in the school called us in to not talk about it. Years later, the teachers would come out and say they actually, many of them had seen the object and didn't want to discuss it. So the children were interviewed at the time. You can go back and watch their own their testimony. It was recorded, and you can see those same adults now speak like when they were children, and it takes them back to being that child. And they talk about being connected telepathically, some of them. Others got messages, some didn't, some saw a certain thing. But did they have that experience for the time? Or was that experience had so it would influence them as adults to have a certain impact or a certain message or share their story in the 2020s or the 2030s at the right time? I don't know. It's a nice thought, perhaps a little bit romantic, but maybe there's an element of this phenomenon to that.
No, I believe that. I believe that it's almost like a time release, right? Like it's a message that's planted for future use.
A little time capsule and a memory.
Yeah. As you're sitting there and you're putting that theory out there, the one thing that keeps hitting me over and over and over again is did you, your mother, your friend, did you all have any lost time when you saw your UFO or nothing like that?
I remember, again, it's a memory from 30 years ago. If I said yes, I'd be making it up now. I think the memory now is I remember leaving the church. I don't remember anything about the night because it's such a random core memory or, a thing I'd done 1,000 times. I remember seeing the object and walking home. I remember getting home and being scared. I lived in like a high-rise tower block, so like 19 floors, 6 flats in each floor. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know how common those are in the States for people to live in, but in Scotland and Glasgow, where I'm from, they were quite common, still are. It's where you put all the poor people, basically.
Yeah.
It was a nice place to stay, but it was fine, but rough. But I always remember if I had walked to the back stairwell that would be like the fire exit, I could have looked down onto the very area and I would have been above the object if it had still been there.
Really?
And I was too scared to go and look in case it was there.
Yeah. And that's a realistic fear for someone your age at that time.
Yeah. And you know what? See, over the years, like I've shared on the podcast before, I'm no one special. I don't have remote viewing capabilities, anything like that. I lucid dream all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I know it's really uncommon, but I get very vivid dreams. I know I'm dreaming, a lucid dream. I remember being in that flat where we lived as a youngster and the wall disappearing and little greys coming into my room. Now, I could claim to have had an experience or an abduction or whatever, but was I just a child with a real big interest in the UFO topic? Because if I'm going to claim that actually happened, then did I also fight with the Avengers? Did I play for that football team I love? And that's where I'm always, I like to think, fair with the UFO topic, take things at face value, but but that sighting happened, definitely. It was very real, very strange, and I've not heard of many others like it, and it's something a lot of listeners reach out to me quite regular, and they'll share videos of other sightings and be like, this sounds like yours, and I've never really had any really close to what I saw, because it was like a Ferris wheel at a 30-40 degree angle spinning incredibly fast. It was just lights.
Wow.
That was it.
That's crazy.
And do you know what I love about my own experience? And I think this makes me appreciate and if anyone listened to what I said earlier about experiencers or the orb phenomenon or anything like that, and I sound overly skeptical, I don't expect anyone to just believe me in what I saw. People would be like, he misidentified something, he's making it up, blah, 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 blah. That's fine. But for me personally, I know what I saw. I remember it. It sounds ridiculous. It was what it was. It's quite unique in terms of sightings because it happened low down and everything like that and a very busy area. However, that helps me in the UFO topic. Whenever someone, a higher up, an official, a well-known personality lets you down with a statement or a sighting or their opinion, or an organization or a group gets debunked, or a sighting or a video gets debunked, that's fine, because myself and tens of thousands of other people have had experiences, anomalous sightings, weird things happen to them, if we go over to even like the ghost side of things, weird apparitions, moments, feelings, chills, whatever it is, you can't explain, but they've happened. And that's enough for me to keep going with the UFO topic and be like, do you know what? There is something to this. Let's kind of keep pushing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Andy, I think we're at the end of our time here, but God, I'd love to do this again. I definitely want to do it again because we've got so much more to talk about. This book right here, though, folks, I highly encourage you to go get it. There's so much more to talk about, even with this book. But I tell you what, we're gonna put it on ice for today. There's five separate subsections to this book that have so much in it. Any case that you can think of worldwide that has had any attention drawn to it. I was surprised, actually, Andy, before we leave people today, I was surprised at the amount of cases that I've heard of that have anything to do with anything in the world that were that you'd included in this book. The case from Iran I remembered that you'd thrown in here. I mean, for one, that I went, oh yeah, that's right, the one from Iran from the 70s is in here. You know,
famously got a lot of detail because of the pilots and intercepting the objects and going back that far. And just let me add, I know we're at the end of our time, and sure, I will come back on whenever you like, Tim. I owe you one. And thank you to folks for listening to me for this long. But the older cases have this kind of wonderful authenticity. There's that word of the day, I think, for us on this podcast, because it's so easy now to dismiss something as a drone or top secret US technology or the Chinese testing out a new hypersonic, you know, craft. If you're going back to the 60s and the 70s and even before that, there's a lot less you can put down to what something was traveling at 6,000 miles per hour or evading radar or spoofing someone. You're talking about technology that is generations ahead of what we have now being flown back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And yeah, and cultures and societies that were far less understanding or accepting of the UFO conversation now back then. So yeah, I think there's like a nice spread, not only of cases throughout the world, but through different decades as well.
Right, exactly. And you put it eloquently there, Andy. You've got, like you said, a good spread from not only time frames, but also from different countries and from different subsections. So it's all in this book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects and Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. It's put up by Ivy Press. We have a link in the description of this program so you can pick it up. Andy McGrillin, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, as they say in the podcasting world.
Absolutely. Pleasure's all mine. Folks, that's going to do it for this week. I want to, again, thank Andy for being here. And again, folks, I want to thank you for being with us. A couple of notes before we take off for today. One, I want to thank Troy Palmer, the executive producer of this program. Thank you, Troy, for everything you do. Two, I want to remind people, if you're listening to this program, you're not watching this program, you can check us out, the original Darkness Radio, on YouTube. And if you're confused as to where to find us on YouTube, it's real simple. Just go to darknessradioshow.com. Both the video and audio of this show are in one place. You just click on the title of the show that you're looking for. You'll see them stacked one on top of the other. You can get both video and audio in one place. That's at darknessradioshow.com. Three, are you looking for fun events and stuff to do? Well, it's real simple. Again, darknessradioshow.com. Go to the events page. You'll be able to find a couple of different trips right now that our partners at Mysterious Adventures Tours are offering, two of them during Halloween. One of them, Dacre Stoker, is taking all of you, if you choose to go with him, to Romania for Halloween. You can party with him at Bran Castle right there, which is what's a good way of putting this? Was the inspiration for Bran Stoker to write, not write, but to... that was his inspiration for Dracula's Castle, was Bran Castle in the novel Dracula. So, but you're going to spend 12 days in Romania with Dacre Stoker, if you so choose, or you can just choose to party on Halloween at Bran Castle. There's two different packages there. You can go to darknessradioshow.com, click on events, and then click on that link, and you can choose one of those two packages. The other package that's available is with Brian J. Cano. You can go to Ireland for Halloween, where it all started. Go to the Pooka Festival for Halloween. So again, you've got those two different trips. Click on the links at darknessradioshow.com/events. The third trip that you're going to want to check out, folks, is the Paranormal Cruise that's coming up in June to France. And of course, Darkness Radio is a sponsor for that Paranormal Cruise through Mysterious Adventure Tours. There's a sign up for it right now, so go check it out right now. All right, so that's all I got for this week. Folks, I want to thank you so much for continuing to watch and listen to us here. So for Beer City Bruiser, for Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for continuing to support us, for listening to us, to watching us right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.